Welcome to the Jump Consulting Teleseminar class with your host, Bella Vasta. Get ready to take the jump with her as she gives you all the information you need to know and some you didn't even know you needed to know. Now, here's Bella.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Bella from Jump Consulting, and I am joined with two fantastic ladies today. First, we have Teresa Toledo Larios. Did I pronounce that right, Teresa?
You sure did.
Yay! From Who's to Cause Pet Sitting. It's a family-owned business, husband and wife-run team, located in the Tri-County Pet Care and Dog Walking business near Nevada, Sutter, and Yuba County in California. They provide an alternative to kenneling, and in the client's home, pet care, daily and extended visits, several days a week to several weeks, midday potty breaks, dog walking, scooping the poop, and overnight care. Teresa just recently completed the vet tech and assistant training program through school, so congratulations on that. And they offer over 35 years of hands-on experience with a wide range of animals and reptiles. Wow, I'm tongue-tied today. we also have on the line Jan Brown. Jan is from Jan's Pet Sitting in Foster City, California. It's right between San Francisco and Silicon Valley, so we got two Cali girls here today. She's been in business since 1997. She also provides dog walking and vacation visits. She is also a pet tech first aid CPR instructor since 2001 and the founder of the Peninsula Professional Pet Sitters, their local networking group of pet sitters. Welcome, ladies, and thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bella.
Today, the goal of this this recording is going to basically be to interview you both with the same exact questions to show the industry how two very well-respected, successful businesses run under different classifications. Jan has employees and Teresa has independent contractors, and there's so much debate and back and forth over this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, that I thought it would be really great to do a compare and contrast. I hope that it's, helpful for everyone listening, and let's get underway. So I'll throw it first to Teresa.
Okay.
Teresa, can you describe your business? Like, when did you start and where are you now?
Sure. We started Who's to Cause Pet Sitting in 2008. It was purely an idea. We had no plans, proposals, anything. It was just to get people like ourselves out of a bad situation. We moved to an area, didn't know anybody, had two small puppies, and they are 7 days apart, and we didn't know what to do with
them
every time we had to leave. I know, 7 days apart, yeah. Half brother, half sister, very busy daddy. So
wow.
It got to the point where, you ask a neighbor, you ask somebody, and then they come, they take care of it, but you never hear anything. And for me, that's not okay because they're Australian shepherd cattle dogs. They're very picky. I'm very picky. I don't want just anybody into my home, let alone in my yard. So it got hard. So in 2008, right after my son was born, about a year later, we were trying to brainstorm what to do to get me out of the house. Well, I love animals. I still take care of animals for people with a baby. My husband said, why don't we go into pet sitting? You know what you want. You know what you like to do. That's how we got started. We did not consult with anybody about anything. I just went in this, started advertising pet sitting. And the one thing my husband said was, okay, you know what? We need insurance. And I'm like, yeah, I think we do. I better go check with all the local laws and stuff for the city here, because at the time we were living in town. And went in, didn't need a business license, which really shocked me. Every county I'm finding out is different based on how you have your business set up, how it's ran, and are you a big little town, big city, little city type thing? So it's nice. I didn't need that aspect. My homeowner's insurance didn't change because I wasn't bringing animals into my home. So it was an easy startup for me. Everything we did, we used out of our own pocket, our money financially. From there, we went into growing it. Just every bit of money we got back, I put back into the, I put back into the business. So as of today, we are a very small part-time business. But for us, it works because I get to know every single pet, every single owner, and I get to grow it a little bit each year, and I get to make sure everything's personalized to them. I don't lose that personal touch that I could have had I gone super big, super fast.
Wonderful. So, Jan, the same question to you. Where did you come, how did you start, and where are you now?
I started my business, Jan's Pet Sitting, in 1997. Initially, it was just me, myself, and I. I actually got into the business a little accidentally. I was looking for something else to do, and I had had it with the corporate world. And the gal who used to pet sit for me, her husband had put in for a transfer out of the area, and her transfer came up, and so she sent me, like, her 10 customers that she had. And I just built it from there. After the first 2 years of pretty much doing everything myself, I realized I couldn't continue to do it all myself. And that's when I started thinking about hiring employees. I now, present day, I have 7 part-time employees. They're permanent, but all part-time. And I say that to designate that they all work, you know, different days of the week, different schedules. It's not a full 40-hour week right now for any of them. And that's where we are now.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So we both get a good idea. Very drastically different, but awesome in their own ways. So, Teresa, tell us about your team. Who helps structure your business and your counsel when needed? I know that you said you started out just balls to the wall, so to speak, with you and your husband, but then you kind of started researching and learning. So tell us about who makes up your team now, team of professionals, advisors, and also comment on why should business owners have a team?
Well, they're all very good questions. So let's see. We started out, like I said, just my husband and I. And since we cover such a large area, we have to network and contract with only those we feel that can meet our expectations and dedication. And we have really high ones. So it's been a challenge, and it will always be a challenge. We also have who is our CPA and tax person, and she's been with us the very beginning. We've actually known her all our life. She's a family friend. So it was only fitting for us to go with her when we started this new venture. And we looked to her for all the input on our finances. We got a question, we text her, email her, call her. She's 5 hours from us, but it works great. As far as our marketing goes, it's us. We do it ourselves. When we need stuff to print or ideas, we use Blu-ray Concepts, Cindy Mansfield. She's right here in Yuba City, and her daughter-in-law, Kim Mansfield, who contracts with us. Their input is really nice because it gives us a different perspective. Someone who's not so involved in the company, they can look from the outside in and give us somebody else's perspective of what our work looks like or our advertising, what's going to catch somebody's eye. So it's really nice. And since we work strictly with fellow pet sitting companies and owners, we feel it's best to seek out an employee attorney versus just the general business attorney or an employer attorney. We've consulted with one. We haven't put him on retainer for our own personal reasons, but we felt going and using an employee attorney to help guide us with the legal issues around employee cases, it's what's going to make an employee versus not an employee. They can guide us and say, you know, nope, this is too much like an employee. You're going to get yourself in trouble. But if you go and use this type of wording, you could state yourself clear of any legal aspects. one of our short-term goals for this year is to find and put a retainer on an employee attorney for us to use whenever we have a question instead of paying that huge fee just to go in and see someone for 30 minutes. I do believe that any business, whether it's pet sitting, house cleaning, or administrative, should have a team composed of financial, legal, human, and marketing. The worst thing that can happen is going to happen when you have
Teresa, I think we might have lost you. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. You were saying the worst thing that can happen. Go on.
The worst thing that can happen is you run into something and you don't have anything in place, and that's when it's going to happen, when you least expect it and you have nothing in order.
That's right. I can't agree with you more. And that's really interesting that you kind of hired the competition in a way, or hired the other side to make in the employee attorney to kind of make sure that you weren't having employees. That's an interesting move and something to think about. I like that.
Well, I had talked to several different employers and attorneys, and they gave me their recommendation. And the attorney himself asked, "Why am I coming to him?" And I said, "The reason being is I don't want to work with employees. You know and interpret all employer laws. Going to you can help guide me from court and give me advice as to, okay, if this is how I want to do something, you're going to tell me, no, that's what employers do for employees. You need to do this or this." So it's kind of playing the devil's advocate, I guess you could say.
For sure, for sure. It's very interesting. Jan, tell us about your team. Who helps structure your business, and who's your counsel when you need it, and why should business owners have a team?
My accountant, for sure. He didn't start out dealing with pet sitters, but he's quite well-versed now in the world of pet sitting.
That's usually the story, huh?
Through the years, I've actually sent other pet sitters to him. So now he's like, oh, yeah, I know.
I love it. You seasoned him for other people.
Exactly.
Did he start out being your accountant, or did you have
he
to go through a couple
was.
Of...
He actually
wow,
was.
Wow, you're
and
lucky.
He specializes in small businesses also, as well as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a good match. It just worked out. And like Teresa, I do not have an attorney on staff. Knock on wood. My need to really have consult with an attorney in the past has been very rare.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot to make sure all my I's are dotted and T's are crossed and everything. Those are my two teams right now.
Lovely. And so would you recommend that people have, what's so great about having a team? Share with our listeners
because
why
I don't know it all. And
you don't.
I'm the world's worst. I mean, I can do the bookkeeping end of things, and I do. But when it comes to the taxes and everything, I don't even want to go there. I don't even want to do my own personal taxes. Never mind that now. I have a company.
It's
just too far and above for me. And then, if I really do have specific legal questions, I can, consult an attorney.
Right. Makes total sense. Total sense. So Teresa's
exactly.
point of, you never know when something's going to happen. And then your point of you don't know everything. I mean, those
exactly.
are really valid reasons.
Exactly.
And I hope people take that from this and do get a team if they don't have a team, because
right.
trying to figure it out while you're going through it is very stressful.
No,
Jan, a follow-up question. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to ask you, so let's debunk a common myth. So I've got one for Jan and I've got one for Teresa. I'll start with you, Jan.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts when someone says, oh, employees cost too much?
usually my first response is you don't know what they can cost you in the long term in terms of
mm-hmm.
they're hurt on the job or something like that. Also, too, if you really take a look and, you know, if you have employees and see what it's actually costing you in terms of taxes and everything, it's a lot, but it's not a huge chunk of money.
Right. So it sounds like what you're saying is, like, do the math before you make that assumption.
Do the math, exactly. And probably, too, because I have employees and I withhold taxes, I probably, for the most part, I may not pay as much as someone who's a contractor, but the contractors are usually paying more in taxes, too.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And Teresa,
right.
Yeah.
Dan's right. The contractors do pay more in taxes.
Yes.
Why don't
very
you elaborate on that, Teresa?
As far as what an independent contractor has to pay?
Yeah, I mean, well, not necessarily what they have to pay. I guess so, yes. Why do you say they pay more in taxes?
Well, you both have employees. Bella, I think you have some here in California, if I'm correct. Is that right?
What was the question?
Yeah. Bella, you have a business here in California as well, a Poop Scoop one, correct?
I did, but I actually sold it last year.
Okay. Trust me, I don't blame you. It's California. Having worked in HR for a totally different industry and knowing taxes per se, I don't know the laws, so please don't hold me to this. Your employers have to pay so much into taxes as well as the employee's check. When you're dealing with contractors, independent contractors on that aspect, all those taxes are the burden of the person you write that check to. So I have my business taxes I have to file. That's a given. But then when I give somebody a 1099 at the end of the year, they are responsible for having been paying taxes on all that money, 600 and above, or 599 and above, throughout the year to the state and federal government. It is not my responsibility. So they have, it's a larger sum, a chunk, if they're going to, when they do it. A lot of people will opt for quarterly taxes. Some will do it as they get paid. Others will do it once a year. And then some will finance it throughout the year because they need all that money or they want all that money during the year. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it speaks straight to it necessarily costs more because I think it might come down to the individual.
Yes.
But, you know, doing those numbers. But let me go on to my myth with ICs.
Okay.
You know, you hear, and maybe it's not a myth. Well, obviously it is a myth if you do. you can't have ICs in the pet sitting industry. That's what we hear a lot. And the follow-up to that is, are you ever afraid of an audit? So what do you say about those two?
Well, if you're going to say you can't have ICs in a pet sitting industry, then you're going to tell every business owner that has a business that contracts work out in California, they can't have independent contractors, that they're always going to have to be an employer. It is scary in California with ICs. Based on the laws, federal will always trump state laws, but never, ever use them as a way to get away from following the law. California is the least friendly state in all the states of the United States that I have been able to find towards small businesses. They are not supporting as small business owners. They want the corporate. So California is a very sue-happy state, so that's probably why there's so many of us that go under, don't go into business, and prefer to work for somebody. I am constantly faced with challenges when I work with ICs. I've spent more time researching the ins and outs of what is acceptable and not acceptable versus state and federal laws when I'm contracting and networking with other sitters and dog walkers, and I have actually spent in the field doing my own work, going and taking care of animals, walking animals, and that such. But what I am finding that no matter which way a business turns, whether it be to an independent contractor or an employee, the risks are huge in California. A good example that I really go by, and it's part of my intake questionnaire when I am getting ready to network or contract with somebody, it's called the Independent Contractor Questionnaire and Checklist. And since I cannot interview or ask interview questions with an independent contractor, this list is straight from the state website to help me figure out if this person's going to work for us or not, just on a legal standpoint. You asked me about audits. Nobody really likes them. No one. And anyone on any given day is open to an audit, personally and professionally. And that's why I have to continually update things, remake my checklist, and network and contract with only the ones that I feel comfortable with. I keep guidelines available. There are so many gray lines in the law that no one is safe from them. It all boils down to interpretation of the judge of the day and the attorney of the day.
I couldn't agree with you more. It is a gray line. And Teresa, from the groups, after, you know, over getting to know you, you have been so kind and generous to upload that independent contractor questionnaire and checklist that you were just talking about. I'd like to read through a little bit of it. Would that be all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. She's got great questions on here that I'd love for our listeners to hear. So as Teresa was saying, she can't necessarily interview, but she does have this questionnaire and checklist. So she has questions on here like, what's your business phone number? What's your business website? Is your business a sole proprietor? If not, what structure? Do you run your business out of your home? Do you possess all the equipment necessary for performing business tasks? Do you ever hire assistants or employees to subcontract the work out? If so, what's your unemployment insurance number or your EIN? Do you hold any professional business licenses? If so, attach them. Do you list your business electronically, hard copy? If so, please explain. Do you advertise your business? What type of insurance do you carry? Please attach a copy. Please provide a copy of your business card, letterhead, and invoice form for our records. These are all directly taken from the guidelines that Teresa was just saying. And anyone who would be a 100% contractor, I've never seen another business have something like this before, and I commend you for that, because it really is like, okay, prove to me that you really are a business or an entity of your own that I am technically contracting work to, you know? So this questionnaire is just fantastic. Great job.
Thank you.
Very good.
Of course. All right, so let's talk staff. And when I say staff, either on Facebook or in my blogs or here, I mean staff as in general. I don't mean ICs. I don't mean employees. I mean anyone that works for you, regardless of their classification. So questions for the both of you. And Jan, you can start off.
Okay.
My question is, do you think that having staff is easier or harder in either model?
I think they're probably the same. I don't think either model's easier or harder.
I have to agree with you on that.
Interesting. I would love for both of you to elaborate on that. Give me the pros and cons and such.
You're still, whether you've got ICs or employees, you're still looking for top quality people. And back in the way, in the early days, maybe my first year in business for about a year, I did use ICs just kind of here and there. I just needed some time off. But I always felt like I was kind of, you know, walking that fine line. And I found at the time finding ICs, good ICs, were just as difficult as employees. And the problems that I encountered, I mean, I've had employees now for, you know, a long, long time. The problems and the issues are almost the same. I didn't find that doing it with ICs was easier or employees to be easier.
I love it. Teresa, same question to you.
I agree with her because I'm taking a devil's advocate here and playing it that, in my opinion, neither is easy or hard. It's what works for you and your business and the clients while keeping within the guidelines of the state and federal laws. With an independent contractor, I have challenges to match up the personalities of my clients and their pets to that of the IC because, you know the old saying, not all pet sitting businesses are going to be a fit for a client. You've ran into it, I've ran into it, a bunch of us have. We've seen it on our group. So I may have an excellent IC, but I cannot match them with my client because their personalities are going to butt heads. The same goes with an employee. You may have the best employee, but when they get into that house or with that client's animal, something does not jive. It does not work for whatever reason. So then you're stuck having to get a different employee or a different IC. We all have those problem clients, you know, our PITA clients. And we want what's best for them, but it's not always going to work. So what do? Do we give them another employee? Do we give them a different IC? It all boils down to, in my opinion, is personality of the client and the pet and that of the person who's doing the work, whether it be me, my independent contractor, you, your employees. You got to find out what fits, what's going to make it fit the best.
So what I'm hearing from the both of you is that you still are having to manage people, whether it's the clients, the staff, and match those things together. Let's go even more specifically. Do you think, I apologize, this isn't a question I even had on my list, but in terms of hiring, we touched on it a little bit, but I would venture to say that hiring an independent contractor, like we just heard about Teresa's form, is a little bit more difficult because you're looking for someone who's already independent, hence the word independent contractor. And as an employee, you would be looking for someone that is more of a follower, maybe that you could kind of mold into your own company. And that would be a way I would think maybe employees would be a little easier or ICs would be a little bit tougher. Because you're literally looking for another company. How do you ladies feel about that and about my thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Jen. I'll let you go first.
Oh, thank you.
I gotta kind
and
of
I'm sorry, I'm throwing you on the spot.
Yeah, I have to think
I'm
about
throwing
that
you on the
one.
Spot. So I'm sorry about that.
You know, yes, in one respect, I tend to agree with Bella that, you know, hiring for an IC and you're looking at specific things like Teresa's list had and everything might be harder, but at the same time, hiring for employees, I think, is just as difficult because when all is said and done, despite what she needs for an IC or anything, we still probably need the same type of people, dependable, people who can think on their own, are reliable, you know, and I'm sure we both get it. We've all gotten it where, you know, someone thinks that because they have a dog that, you know, and they just love animals, that that's enough. And it's finding those people that have that more.
It is, because a lot of times I will run into the hobbyist pet sitter. They do not have their act together. They're not personal and they're not professional. And what I've noticed is I've started making a mental intake list that tells me, you know, here's a red flag. Here's a red, this one's kind of questioning. So I ran into a lot of that. But one thing I was jotting down here on my notes earlier was about the employees. And whether it's an employee or an IC, I think it's just as hard to find a reliable, dependable, and dedicated employee who really wants to work, who enjoys what they're doing, and wants best for the clients and the business that they're either working for or they're contracting work for. Because if you're a good employee, you want to put your best foot forward. You're going to do the best so you can, you know, you have continued employment. if you're an IC, you're going to put your best foot forward, because not only do you have your own clients, but now you've got another business here that wants to contract their overflow to you. So you want what's best there. You're going to do everything you possibly can to go out there. Something I noted, no names or anything from our group, she got a picture of a client drinking or something, I guess, on a job or overnight job. I'm not real clear on it. I didn't read it all.
Oh, no, 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 no. No, that's not what that was. That was... That had nothing to do with that. That was one pet sitter was fortunate enough to know another pet sitter in another state who the pet sitter was moving to. So they went and they had an interview, and the interview ended up to be 6 hours long, and they became friends, and then they went out for a beer. So it was like a match made in heaven.
Good.
It was like, so, yeah, so that wasn't a drinking on the job situation.
Oh, good.
It
well,
was a
good.
Wonderful it's... connection made in heaven.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah,
These are all things you have to look at, you know. One thing I do, and I'm sure, I don't know, I shouldn't say I'm sure other employers do, but me, for myself, I will Google the person's name. I look on Megan's Law. I look on Facebook. I look on LinkedIn. I look everywhere I possibly can to find out about the individual person and about the business they say they have. Because without physically being able to ask them questions and interview them, I got to do my homework. So it takes me a little bit longer than the employer.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So
I love it. Thank you, ladies, for being so open about this. This is going to be really great, and I know it's going to help a lot of people. We're rounding up to about 25 minutes left, and I'm going to move on here, and I'm going to ask you each separately, how do you train your staff? And I know that might not be the technically perfect word, but we'll go with it, or check up on them for quality control. And I don't know, Teresa, do you want to go first or Jan? Whoever.
There's really no training with an IC. You either know your job, business, you've been doing it. I teach somebody how to walk a dog, what to look for. Beyond them. One thing I do, I always invite them to go doing a dog walk or a pet sit so that I can talk to them, get to know them, and ask them questions and watch their body language and reaction to the pets that I'm taking care of. It kind of gives me an idea. And then when I know they have a job with us to check quality control, I know based on what I send them from the email or the text message from our client that I just forward to them, I know the time frame they're supposed to be at a home. So I do random checkups. I'll just pop in and visit with them while they're on the job. And if they're not there in between the time, which I have never dealt with, I don't know what I would do. I'd be very unhappy, I think, if they weren't there when the clients had told them to be there. I can't tell them when to be there. The client can, but I can't.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Great point. Same question to you, Jan. How do you train your staff and check up on them for quality control?
Sure. Well, initially when I hire them, I sit them all down and we go through my employee manual page by page. And it's a work in progress, but it's pretty intensive. Yes. I have found if I just give them the employee manual and tell them to read it, they don't read it. So this way, we go through it page by page on day one, and the things I really need to emphasize, I do. So that's the initial thing on the first day. When they're first starting out, they either go with me or one of my senior sitters to the jobs. I don't just send them in sight unseen. And then depending on how they're doing, maybe after a week or so, I might start to send them in on one or two by themselves. And I'll spot check, just like Teresa does. I will occasionally just stop in to make sure everything's okay. I don't spot check that much if it's a seasoned employee because I pretty much know, you know, them and everything. Also, too, because I don't always necessarily have the same person doing the entire job. So I might have Susie go in today and maybe she's off tomorrow and I have Michelle go in tomorrow. So if there's something that's not right, Michelle's going to let me know.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, in this day and age, everyone's got security cameras.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but mm-hmm. yeah, that's basically, I mean, that's getting off into a different topic there. But yeah, that's how I train my staff, you know, and I check up on them, and usually at the beginning, you know, once they've got, you know, maybe I'll give them a couple, three jobs to do, and I'll say, okay, this is how I would suggest you do them as far as go here first and so on. But then as time goes on, I just let them figure it out. And
gotcha.
I mean, they can ask me, but after a while, they pretty much know.
Fantastic. Great answer. So, ladies, if there was like a percentage of your overall revenue that went to staff, like labor costs, what would that be? And can you explain to us how payroll is submitted for your business, or how you know what to pay people, or how that all works?
Mm-hmm. Want me? I'll go first. This is Jan. I'll go first. I would say that percentage-wise, I'd say about 60%.
Wow. Okay.
Is what's the word? Staff. Is it
labor?
Employment,
uh-huh.
And that's including taxes and everything. It might be 60-62% around in there. I use QuickBooks Online, and I use their payroll system, which is really nice. I have everyone set up for direct deposit. All I have to do is plug in the figures. It calculates what needs to be withheld, and I don't even have to do that. And then when every quarter when I have to send in my quarterly forms to the state and to the IRS, I just print them off and everything's calculated. All I have to do is sign them.
Beautiful. Easy enough.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
And Teresa?
I pay anywhere from 45-60% right off the top. I don't have payroll. Everybody has to submit an invoice to me on their letterhead. And a detailed job log. The job log basically confirms whatever it is that we had to send them or the client left for them of responsibilities. And they email it to me, scan it to me, however they feel. Once I go through their invoice, I make sure it confers with what the owner wants. I'd say I pretty much get a text or a call from all our clients when they get home. And it's either perfect or can you tell me if they did da-da-da-da? Well, if there is even that one question, I don't even cut a check. It's not going to happen until I talk to them. And I pay everybody through our bank. It's really fast. They're paid within 24 to 72 hours. It's called Top Money. I put their cell number in. I put how much I'm paying them, and it goes straight to them. So, but no payment without an invoice. No invoice, no check. I can't pay you. I need backup.
Perfect. Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah,
that's also very clear cut, which is great. Jan, we'll keep going back and forth here. Jan, how do you schedule your staff members for PetSit?
I'm sorry, you cut out. How do I schedule what?
Oh, how do you schedule your staff members for PetSit? How do they know what they've got coming up?
I use Power Pet Sitter online date scheduling database, and my employees, when I hire them, to work specific days. Some are just weekends. I've got one that she's Monday through Friday. So as I do the schedule each week, they can access it. My employees can access it, see what their schedule is. They can go back on. They can see if there's any changes, additions, if someone's canceled. They can also access the client information.
Perfect. And Teresa, how do you let your ICs know that they have a job or that there's a job up for them to take?
That's actually kind of a good question because we can't say this is your job. So
right.
We work off of work orders. And what we do is we take the basic information from our client, find out what it is, and it's first offered to the person who lives the closest to the client. If they reject it, then I send a mass email and text out with the basic information, the date, the time, and what what we can afford to pay. I never tell them what we're going to pay. It's negotiated because then I'm falling back into the employee category. So we discuss what we can afford to pay. The first person to respond to the email or text that says, oh, I want that job, we go ahead and send them a copy of the work order and say, look, this is what we can afford to pay. Will this work for you? 9 times out of 10, it's yes, and it's fine. Okay, sign your work order. You're agreeing to these terms. Here's a copy of the client's wish list of what they want done, that we're done.
I love everything that you just said. I love how you said what we can afford to pay, because I think one of the misconceptions is that people schedule independent contractors and say, oh, I pay them 60%. And just the fact that they're saying they pay them and not the contractor saying, this is my rate, or them saying, this is what we can afford to pay, do you accept it? Your verbiage on that was really on and awesome, and I think a lot of people should listen to that.
Thank you.
So, Jan, next question. If your staff ever got injured, what would happen? What is your protocol?
My staff, because they are employees, they are covered under workers' compensation, which is required in the state of California, even if you only have one employee. So they know, and it is in the employee manual, that any injury, no matter how slight, has to be reported to me immediately. I've only, knock on wood, I've only had one person that's really had a workers' comp injury, and happily it didn't result in any lost time. She got some antibiotics and everything was fine.
Wonderful. And for those that are listening that may be kind of getting their feet wet with everything, can you just briefly in a sentence or two explain what workman's compensation is?
Sure. Workers' compensation covers the employee for any injuries on the job. It could be anything from a dog bite to they arrived at the client's house and they slipped and fell. Different states have different requirements. In California, if you have one employee, you are legally required to have workers' compensation, but every state has different requirements.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. And I'd like to just add on to that that they'll also pay a percentage of lost wages if the person needs to be off of work for a certain amount of time.
Correct.
Teresa, same question to you. So God forbid a staff member ever got injured, what would happen and what would be your protocol?
Okay, well, let me correct you. They're not my staff.
Okay, I'm sorry.
They're my staff. They're employees. I know it's very hard. You have employees.
Well, I was also – I also tried to let everyone know, too, that staff is a general term that I was going to use.
No, I know.
So I'll keep calling them ICs for you. So I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's funny you asked that because I just did a consult about 3 months ago, and the lady asked me, well, who's going to be responsible if – one of your employees or independent contractors or you fall on the ice and hurt yourself? Am I going to come home to a bunch of doctor bills? Am I going to be sued? Is my homeowner insurance going to be smacked? And I kind of laughed and I said, no. I said, as a professional, one of the things we have to do is we have to maintain our own professional liability insurance. I said, nothing would happen to you from me. I carry my insurance. If I get hurt while on your property, it is my responsibility because I'm here taking care of animals. I said, any independent contractor who works for me has to show me proof that they have insurance. I keep a copy of it in the file. And one of the things I do when I talk to people is, do you have insurance? If you do, can I please have a copy of it? One thing I don't
now,
know.
Now, which insurance are we talking about? Just to make sure we're clear, because there's so many different insurance out there. Are you talking about health insurance?
No, it's professional liability insurance, your business insurance.
Okay.
CNA, Kennel Pros, our insurance through them. There's other pet sitting insurance ones out there. I think Pet Sitters something is one of the girls. Insurance company, and it has that she's covered.
Let me ask you a follow-up question to that, because I'm pretty sure the business liability is for it's not for the sitter. It's for the pets in control, in your custody, care, and control, you know, or the home. So this insurance that you're talking about also covers the pet sitter for injuries?
That I don't know. That's where I use my insurance if something happens. I have my own personal health insurance. I cannot be responsible for everybody else. California, everybody hears it on the news, covered California, the Obamacare. So there's no reason why someone can't have health insurance. I know I want to make sure all my people who I contract with have professional license. Insurance, liability insurance. Health insurance, I can't control that. That's something I can't control. I can't control the liability insurance, but I can say, you're going to work for me and contract work from me, you have to have this. And I get copies. The one thing that I still have to look into that I'm concerned about is a lot of us transport animals for our clients. What happens when we're doing it in our vehicle and so they get into an accident and don't have auto insurance, but they have their liability insurance? Who's covered then? So that's another area I'm looking into right now about auto insurance with transporting animals.
Well, I would speculate, and not that this is an interview with me, but that you hire people, just like you wanted people with business insurance liability, you would also make sure that they have car insurance, you know, aside from the fact that it's usually a state, I mean, it's the law, you have to have it. But I know that the personal car insurance aside, if a sitter was in an accident, if my sitter was in an accident, it's been explained to me from Moyer Foster that they would be covered and the pets would be covered under the insurance policy that I have through Moyer Foster. Now, that also means everyone needs to go call and talk about their own policy with their own insurance agent. But the part that would worry me personally would be the personal injury part. So, but you have a good point about the Obamacare, where now everyone needs to have health insurance. So insurance
can
just
we
never
ask
ends.
For it?
There's
I don't
so many
know.
Different types.
For any of us, you know, I don't know what other states are, but California, you know, you don't have to offer insurance anymore to your employees. Well, as an independent contractor, one of my questions in general that I've got to look into now is, can I ask them if they have a health insurance? Can I ask if they've got some type of coverage so that if they do bit or break a leg, what happens? Because I don't want that responsibility, and I know I'm open to it to an extent.
Well, I've also heard a couple of different things, and I think this is the tough part about having a business, and this is why we're having an opener conversation about it. I've heard two different stories from credible sources that contradict each other. You know, they're insurance agents that say, if my employee was to go to the hospital and they did not have workman's compensation for whatever reason, the hospital would ask them three different ways from Sunday, did this happen on the job? How did this happen? Now, as a pet sitter, it's pretty easy because they're like, oh, I was walking a dog, you know? Mm-hmm. And people generally, you know, don't think like, oh, that was at work. but that if the health insurance company, I mean, they want to get rid of as much liability as they can, they hear that it's on the job, they throw it back to the employee or the employer or the company or the contractor and refuse to pay for it. Now, I've heard of other people that have actually gone to the hospital and that wasn't the case, and they were able to get their, you know, simple thing taken care of. They got a sprain, a brace, and that was it. So that's just another gray area to think about and consider for every business owner out there. What if? Because like what we said at the beginning of all this when we were talking about teams, it's really important and responsible, honestly, as a business owner, to know the answers to all of your what ifs. And your team is the ones that you can hopefully trust enough to give you those answers. So the second to last question before we wrap this up in the next 8 minutes here, Jan, we'll go back to you. How does your staff learn what they need to do for a pet sit? Who directs them, and how do you know that it has been complete? I actually think you kind of answered this with the power pet sitter question, but we can just go over it again really quick.
That's part of it. Of course, you know, clients always leave notes that, you know, are a little different from what's in power pet sitter. And I always say, if you arrive at the house and there's something that doesn't jibe, give me a call. But pretty much the rule of thumb is go by what the client left in the notes. We also, at our visits, for our vacation clients, we have a daily checkoff list. Okay, they fed the animals. They, you know, brought in the mail. They did a house security check. Whatever it is, they have to go through and check each of those items. And then, you know, we leave a little note as well. And my thing to my employees is, if you check that item, that means you did it, and you better do it, because if I find out you didn't, you know, we're going to have a problem. For our midday dog walks, we're not that extensive. We just leave a little notebook, and we leave notes in it every day, you know, what went on and what happened.
Gotcha. That's great. And Teresa, same question to you, and kind of touched on it a little bit, but do you have anything to add to the whole offering
yes.
the closest pet sitter? And go on.
For our dog walks, we have a dog log. For the walkings, we note the date, the time, and the walker, and if there's any significance, we leave a comment there. The walkers, the pet sitters, they all text me, hey, we're here, or hey, like, well, you got a client right now, the owner forgot to tell us, you know, they've got some skin allergies going on, and our Kim, our independent pet sitter, she texts me, and she goes, hey, you know anything that's going on with Bama or anything? No, why? What's wrong? His chin feels all scabby, like a burn or something. No, let me find out. I text the owner, oh, yeah, we forgot to tell you. Gives me a list. I forward it to her, so she automatically knows. Everything's on a work order. Our clients tell us, email us, leave notes at the house. It's an open line communication between all of us. They just know. And when they're done with the job, I know, because they tell me it's the last visit and send me an invoice.
Fantastic. I know I said the last one was the second to last question, but this is going to be a second to last question. how many hours a week would you say that you work in your business? So, like, physically doing the work, the pet sits, not the office stuff. Jan, and then Teresa.
So, not the office stuff, but the actual jobs?
Yes.
Oh, lately, it's been maybe an hour a week, if that. It varies.
Uh-huh. Okay. And Teresa?
Office, does that mean going out and networking, too, or just actual physical walks, pet sitting and stuff?
Just the physical pet sitting and stuff. We can, like, yeah, not networking,
I
not
can
office
honestly
stuff.
Say I do zero.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
Well, I would like to
okay,
do
the
more,
very
but...
last question.
Okay.
The very, very last question for both of you, and I'll let you decide who wants to take it first. Overall, so we both have two wonderful, successful businesswomen here in California. One chose employees. Why? Why did you choose the distinction that you're in?
Well, I'll go first. This is Jan. I went with employees because I had heard about all the warning signs about using ICs, and I wanted to be able to sleep at night. So, and I also, to build on that, I wanted more control.
Perfect. You control freak? I'm just kidding.
Wait a minute. We're all business owners, so we are control freaks, every one of us.
I know, I know. So, Teresa, are you a control freak, too?
That's the end of the
reason why. So why did you choose ICs?
ICs was not my first choice. It really wasn't. I still would like to go towards employees, believe it or not. I really do. But due to the location of where my clients are to where I live, it is not manageable for me to do it as an employee. I would have to drive daily anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes and pay rent for an office.
Oh, my.
And be there. So where I live in relation to where all my jobs are, I see was the way to go for me. Ask me that 3 years ago before I moved, I probably would have bought a house closer to where all my jobs were instead of 40 minutes away from it.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing from the both of you is that, oh, go on.
Oh, so just a little word of, if you're planning on moving, make sure it's within your covered area.
Yes, definitely. It makes things a lot easier
honest to God, is the only reason why I've gone to IC. Eventually, I am going to switch everything to employee because I am a control freak. We all are. We're business owners. But I want to train them the way I want things done. I want that control. I want the final say how. So
fantastic. What I hear from both of you ladies is that you've really looked at your own situations, your own thoughts and feelings, desires, and, you know, with Teresa, with you and your husband, you know, and really figured out what works for you. Not what works for your competition or the kid next door or another business on the other side of the country. You figured out what works for you. And it seems like you both are very happy. And I think that's what every business owner strives for. So I think it's fantastic the way you guys are both doing it. I have a lot of respect for the amount of research and T's crossed and I's dotted that you've both put into making it right and not just kind of doing it by the seat of your pants and following what everyone else is doing. I mean, you actually have teams and reasons why you do what you do, you know? So I think that's really commendable. If anyone wants to get a hold of you after listening to this and just talk or chat, would either of you be open to that?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Wonderful.
There is no reason why I can talk to somebody. I'd rather pass on my bad experiences so they don't have to experience them.
I have said that so many times. Like, I'll tell you where not to step. So
yeah.
Anyone who's listening, they can get Teresa by going to or Googling Hooves to Paws Pet Sitting. And it's hooves, like, you know, like a hoof, like a H-O-O-V-E-S. Yeah. Topaws.com. And then Jan is Jan's Pet Sit. Is that correct, Jan?
Correct. JansPetSit.com. Yes.
Perfect. Well, ladies, thank you so much for being. Oh, go on.
I was going to say it's easier to reach me by phone. So let me give you the number. It's 530-475 CARE, CARE, which is 2273.
Perfect.
And I can give you my email.
Okay.
It's It's JansPetSit at Comcast.net.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, ladies. It's been
thank
a pleasure.
You,
I really appreciate
thank
your
you.
Time.
Our
this
pleasure.
Was wonderful.
Our pleasure.
All right. You have a great day. Thank you.
Right, you too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You too.
This has been another teleclass in a series of many with Bella Vasta of Jump Consulting. For more information or to find out what other classes are offered, visit www.jumpconsulting.net. All rights reserved.